This is the Home Tech Podcast Show number 57, recorded on January 5th, 2012. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a very, very nice and warm Bellevue, Nebraska. It was about 60 degrees today. Got outside for a run, and it felt like spring. However, I know the winter is coming, so it will be here soon enough. And of course, we post this show each and every week with world-class show notes done by Andrew over at theAverageGuy.tv. You can contact the show, send us an email, podcast@theAverageGuy.tv, or track me down on Twitter. That's just @JayCollison. You can also find us on Facebook or on iTunes by searching The Average Guy Podcast. And please, if you're out on iTunes, it's always nice to leave a comment out there. That helps with our search rankings. We've also set up all the links you could ever need to automatically download the podcast to your iPhone, iPod, iPad, as well as any Android phone or tablet device. Just look for the iTunes or RSS buttons over at theAverageGuy.tv. Over in the right-hand column, there's just some buttons there. Look for them. Well, we are doing our first podcast in 2012. I have no idea where 2011 went. We did 56 podcasts between November of 2010 and the end of December of 2011, and we start fresh here in January. Most of the crew is back this week. Of course, it's good to welcome Andrew Morris. Of course, Andrew's in Australia and on vacation, joining us via 3G connection and his laptop. Andrew, how are you doing this evening, or actually this afternoon for you?
Yeah, doing well, Jim. I'm up here on the north coast of New South Wales, so about a bit over halfway between Melbourne and Brisbane, and it's raining outside and about 25 degrees Celsius and 95% humidity.
Oh,
lovely day to be at the beach. Lovely day to be at the beach.
nice and warm summer day for you with a little bit of humidity, huh?
Yeah, a lot of humidity.
Yeah, well, Andrew, welcome back. You've been traveling around the country, taking some holiday, and it's good to have you back.
Yep, good to be back.
And of course, back after a birthday celebration and a Christmas break, the guy behind BIOS Mods and BIOS-Mods.com, that of course is Christian Johnson. Christian, feeling a year older this week or last week?
I'm feeling pretty good. I'm not feeling much older, I don't think. I guess I'm going to keep it that way.
Yeah, do you have a good
problem? Happy birthday.
No, I don't know, did we?
We said happy birthday. I've actually boycotted the birthday song.
Ah, indeed.
I don't allow it to be uttered.
I can see that. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of hokey.
I can appreciate that.
Just saying. Christian, did you do anything fun for your birthday?
Yeah, we went to go see the second Sherlock Holmes movie, which really enjoyed quite much. It was pretty impressive.
I think I'm going to go out tonight or tomorrow night and see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Good stuff. Good tech in there, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, very cool. Well, welcome back. Good to have you back. And I'm sure you got a busy 2012 planned.
Oh, yes. Hell yeah. Yep, lots coming up.
And what's the tie? Is that you doing the board of directors again tonight?
No, it's part of the academy type deal.
Nice.
It comes with the job.
Well, welcome. Well, doing his 7-week rotation and back for another crazy episode of the Home Tech Podcast is Bill Pullman. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great. Great to be back with the trio.
Yeah. Good to have you. And your microphone sounds good.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Always good to have you on the show. I always ask you this question. I ask the guys what's kept you busy over the last couple of weeks. Of course, Christmas. Did you get any good tech?
Did I? Absolutely not. Anything I bought? Yeah, but as far as gifts go, no, I didn't get anything fantastic.
Nothing good, huh?
No. Gave out some goodies, but that's it.
Well, you're going to buy yourself some good tech throughout the year, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm getting ready for the new Intel release, so saving my nuts for that.
Nice. Well, at least you're not John Zadler. I don't know if you listened to the Home Service show a couple weeks ago. He was roasting his chestnuts. So,
yes. Forget it.
That was a great line. If you're a Home Service show listener and you haven't gone back, go back to the show right before Christmas and listen to the outtakes at the end. Yeah, I was cracking up. Well, guys, appreciate you coming out tonight. It just seems like we were talking about this in pre-show. It just seems like, man, Christmas time was nuts for everybody. Seemed like last year when we were podcasting, I didn't have hardly any trouble getting anybody. And of course, it seemed like we're all a lot busier this Christmas than last. And so I don't know. Maybe that just goes in cycles. Who knows? But being busy, and I just came back from a trip. I was out in Colorado Springs and drove back. Lots of travel going on during this time. I don't know. Bill, did you go anywhere for Christmas?
No, actually, everyone came up because, you know, when you have the youngest son in the family, everyone, or youngest child, I should say, everyone comes to you. So that's, it was like one day, nice. this day, you know, a lot of family members every day. It was always an event. Who's coming now? What do I need to get for food? And,
yeah,
you know, it was just hectic.
Well, that's nice. We never had that luxury. We always had the young kids, and we had to haul them around. It seems like my older brothers and sisters were like, why don't you come to our house? And, you know, I was like, well, why don't you come here? Although, with all the kids that I had, we didn't have room for them. But Christmas time always brings a little bit of travel. A lot of folks do travel. And so I wanted to run this by you guys because I know everybody has kind of their gadget gear that they take when they travel. And on this trip, I really was a minimalist. Now, you guys are going to laugh when you say this, but you know, I took two laptops and my phone. so that's probably hardly being a minimalist. But I took my work laptop. I took my own laptop because there's something things I can't do on my work laptop that I can only do on my own personal one. So I take both. I took a phone with me when I traveled. And then I actually did a lot of Skype and some Google Plus off my phone, which worked really well. I took a couple chargers along with me. You know, you got to have the right cables and such. And then one of the things I have, but I didn't take this time, was a battery backup, you know, just an extra battery. My cell phone works so well now with that, you know, I get a full charge off of day. I've rarely been taking my extra battery with me. So I wanted to run around the horn with you guys. That's kind of what I took on my trip. I used it all. I logged in. My dad was not well, and he was in the hospital, and so I was in there sitting with him. And I used all of it while I was in there. I opened the laptop. And by the way, the hospital had fantastic Wi-Fi. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, but it was connect and fast, and chatted with a lot of folks and did some Facebook updates and stuff. So if you haven't, you know, if you need some free Wi-Fi, just stop by your local hospital. That wasn't sit in the lobby and get some Wi-Fi. And you know what? They had a Starbucks in the lobby. I mean, how good is that? Yeah, so it was nice indeed. I want to ask you guys, you know, what's the traveling essentials when you go? So Bill, we'll start with you. I'm sure you've got some essentials when you do travel. You have some young kids or young child? You have one or
yeah.
How,
just have, one? Yeah,
just one.
Yeah,
okay.
One son. Yeah, 18 months. So
little boy, what's the essentials from tech? What do you take? What's the essentials for you?
Well, you know, kind of like everyone else, I'm not bringing the video camera. I'll bring the SLR, the digital SLR, and a point and shoot, and my iPhone. And obviously every parent needs a DVD player, portable DVD player, so you can put in Chuggington and all that fun stuff to keep your child happy.
Do you have a built-in TV in your car?
Mine you can't play while the car drives. My wife's Acura has a flip down, so she can do that. But we also bring the portable too, so when we're at a house or wherever, we can pop it on.
Sure. So those are your essentials?
Yeah, just to try to capture everything you can, and you know, use the iPhone for anything I want to pop on the social network real quick, and anything I really care about that I want to get quality, I'll use the DSLR or the video camera.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy now. With the phones, right? It's just I did a couple of these, took a quick picture, two clicks to Facebook, little comment, you're done, and it gets updated and out there. And I met a friend, high school friend, hadn't seen 25 years there in Denver, and we took a quick picture. I sent it up, and by the time I got in the car and got to the bottom of the hill, it already had three comments. I was like, dang,
yeah,
guys, what are you guys doing? But that's pretty amazing. Andrew, you're on the road right now. What do you got with you?
Let's see. Between the two of us, we've got two HP touchpads, one running Android, one running WebOS. I've got my work laptop. I've got we've got a smartphone each, and we've got another phone. And we don't have, I think we've only got one camera with us this trip, but I didn't bring a camera. So we've got
one SLR.
Just a little, Yeah, I didn't bring the digital SLR, so we just got an XS90 with us this trip.
Is that a little point and shoot?
Yeah, a little point and shoot Canon job. Normally we'd have a digital SLR with us as well.
Okay.
And it, so light on for tech.
Anything light. Listen to you. any one of those pieces you couldn't do without, if you could only take one, what would you take?
The phone.
Yeah, it's got to be the phone, right? That's probably a pretty dumb question. Sorry about that.
Yeah, and that'd be the Android phone as well. It wouldn't be the Nokia.
Yeah.
Because the Nokia is just a piece of crap.
Is it a feature phone, or does it have Android on it, or what?
It's an E52, so it's one of their old candy bar.
One of the does it have Symbian? Phones. Or just it's
yeah,
just
it's Symbian.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. So it's rubbish.
Yeah, it's the phone is by far, although my sister showed up. She came in on Tuesday and relieved me of hospital room duty. And she had her iPad with her. And we were doing some, you know, she is just in love with her iPad. And she does everything from it. And she'd said at one point to me, I don't think I need a phone. And we talked, I kind of talked her off the ledge at that point. You kind of do need a phone. But, you know, she could easily do kind of one of those feature phones that's just a phone and then do everything else on the iPad for the most part. So that's at least where her life is. That's the kind of the way it worked out. Christian, when you travel, what do you take?
Netbook, HTC cell phone, normally my Samsung camera, and that's really about all I need.
Can you tether your laptop to the phone?
I can, but if I were to get caught, it would be very bad.
That's never stopped you before.
Well, the firmware I have on here is not, it's like a modified version of what Sprint put out, and they included a Wi-Fi router software program in here.
Okay.
But
yeah,
if they started seeing that, even though I have unlimited, if they started seeing computer bandwidth usage, it would not be good.
I was probably around North Platte here in Nebraska. So if you're listening to the recorded version of this or you're listening live, you know, go to Google Maps and pull up Nebraska. So I was planning to stop in Kearney to get Wi-Fi. And, you know, my first thought was, okay, I'll find a Wi-Fi at a Starbucks, right? Because, of course, they're famous for having free Wi-Fi. While I was driving, I was doing some searching. Of course, voice search, right, on the Android. And so I found the Starbucks, and it actually said it was closed on the website. So I called them, and that was wrong. Somebody had not updated that incorrectly, and they were not closed. But I gave them a call and said they were actually in a Target. And I said, do you have free Wi-Fi? And they said, well, no, we don't. So the ones inside the stores don't even have free Wi-Fi. And I thought, shoot. Where am I going to get Wi-Fi? And I thought. And then all of a sudden I thought, you know what? McDonald's now has Wi-Fi. And in competition, Burger King has done it as well. And I think you're going to see that kind of be most likely a standard offering here just about anywhere. Christian, as you're carrying your net top around, are you finding Wi-Fi access difficult to get as you move around?
I know Tim Hortons is normally very good about having open Wi-Fi, although it's whitelisted, so there's like only so many sites that work, and then stuff just stops working. But a lot of times I can actually open up my VPN connection and just bypass whatever stuff they have going on there and forward my gateway, which really helps. But it's still pretty widely available, at least where I am. There's always signals if you're in a public area. A lot more of them now. I've been like a lot of even the residential stuff is all web encrypted because a lot of the wireless routers you'll see around this area are Verizon Fios routers, and when they install it, the tech automatically goes in and enables WEP. So
right, yeah, it's just in some rural spots, and of course where I live, anytime you leave the city, it's rural. You know, at that point, that's harder and harder to find. But boy, you know, McDonald's is everywhere. Starbucks is not. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it just a lot easier, at least here, to get Wi-Fi. Bill, in your area, open Wi-Fi pretty available?
I think Bill had to
he turned his
step out to
oh, did
Rick Thomas, the tank engine.
Either that, or did I miss his? Maybe I
yeah,
missed
you missed
his,
the memo.
I did miss the memo. Let's see here. Oh, there he goes. It was on a different window. That's why. Well, that's very cool. Well, anyways, McDonald's kind of saved my bacon because I got logged in. I actually used Live Mesh and connected to my PC back here, and got the podcast started. Now, what I didn't anticipate, so I started the podcast remotely, and I was going to then call my phone from my connection back here so I could join kind of the conference call, and then I was going to shut the laptop and just let it run, right, the rest of the night. And little did I know that when I would disconnect the Live Mesh session, it also stopped the podcast, you know, Procaster, the software we use for the podcast. It, like, disconnected that as well. Yeah, I was a little disappointed in that. You know, here I thought that would be a good option for remote podcasting, and that the disconnect, whatever signal it sends to disconnect, must have some kind of effect on the network, and it stopped the podcast. So that's kind of a bummer.
Same viewer, Jim. Same viewer.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. I have to try that at some point. Hey, Bill, you're back on.
Yeah, I'm back here.
Hey, what? I was going to ask you a question. How's the Wi-Fi availability in your area?
Wi-Fi is excellent. Actually, the cable company in my area, Cablevision, you know, if you go in the major areas or major towns and cities, they have on every pole a wireless. So if you have your phone, you can connect all the time with your account and log in. So you really aren't worried about wireless in major areas, obviously.
Right, right. Okay, so it's like a WiMAX, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It works great.
Nice. Well, so it's changing the equation. I mean, with the availability of Wi-Fi, just about, you know, I hate to say just about anywhere because that's not really true, but in a lot of spots, you know, you can have connectivity all the time. And I had connectivity all the way from Denver to Omaha, and some of those spots are pretty barren. And yeah, now some of it was roaming. Which Sprint on Sprint, roaming is free. So I had no problem switching over. And man, I used the heck out of my roaming data. I wonder what that's going to cost Sprint. Or hopefully they don't pass it on to me. I don't think they will. But yeah, it's just getting pretty easy to make that connection. So it's pretty cool. I'm excited about it as they restrict home bandwidths. Maybe there'll be more public bandwidth available and you can get to it easier. So. Hey, I don't know if you guys saw this, but somebody posted, it was Tim Black. He had posted out at The Average Guy on Facebook a blog post about Windows Storage Spaces, which is a technology that's coming with Windows 8. We've been talking about it for a while. I don't know if that post just picked it up or what. It's been out for a while, but I wanted to ask you guys, you know, Windows Storage Spaces kind of takes the place of Drive Extender that was pulled out of the Windows Home Server and basically allows you to put any number of drives that you want into your box and, you know, at the desktop level. And it'll just put those, raid those together in a pool. I wanted to ask the question, not from a home server storage perspective, because we talk about that on the home server show, but I wanted to ask you guys at the local level on your desktop PC, Does that change the equation at all? And Christian, I want to start with you because you're kind of the guy in the guts of your stuff all the time. If you had storage spaces available to you at the desktop level, does that change anything for you? I mean, do you start using that, or are you going to keep your single drive or your SSD or whatever in there to use for, you know, to use it at your desktop?
I mean, for me, really, our network storage is so built out that the only real thing that eats up this drive is the fact that I have like over 500 programs installed on this desktop, which really takes up space. But I mean, I keep most of the stuff. I would stay with single drive. I mean, there's really no advantage in my situation to start putting stuff back in the other direction. It's just kind of would be backwards from the steps we've taken to go to network storage.
So you just have a single drive in your box right now, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the only time I would see more drives is not for storage, but for speed. If I was going to raid two SSDs, take two, you know, 64 gigabyte SSDs and throw them in RAID 0 and burn down the house, then,
right,
you know, that's one thing. But for storage, I really don't need it.
Okay. Andrew, do you see any use at the home level for storage spaces?
For me, only for a home server. I tend to keep my data separate from my system drive where I can. My home PC is fairly undisciplined, so there's junk everywhere on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So for me to combine the drives into a pool is going to trip me up at some point in time.
Yeah.
And similar to Christian, anything I want to keep goes onto the home server.
Right, right. And we're unusual in that sense. Andrew, let me ask you this question. Do you think it has any effect on the average user who doesn't have a home server or some kind of extra storage in their house?
It's hard to know. I think your average person doesn't really care about this kind of thing. I think a lot of them, they're going to see the word storage pool, or they're going to see, you know, storage spaces and stuff like that, and they're going to look at it and go, no, too hard.
Okay.
Especially if they have the ability to, you know, they're going to say things, words like RAID and mirroring and, you know, parity and things like that. I think a lot of people, you know, thinking about my parents and my in-laws and even my wife to a degree, they're going to look at it and go, yeah, I've got to read something about that.
Well, so, but they do make that. I mean, in all the screenshots that I've seen, they do make that technology pretty easy. They don't use the word RAID, you know, in the setup at all, you know. So your average user who buys their PC at Best Buy and it has a 1 terabyte system drive in it and they run out of space, do you think they're savvy enough to go buy another one, put it in the box, and then invoke the pool, you know, the drive storage technology? Or do manufacturers start shipping that with 2 drives and start proclaiming, you know, a backup, you know, live backup by putting them automatically in a pool or in a mirror?
Yeah, I guess that's sort of where companies like Western Digital are heading with the Sentinel, isn't it? You know, when you're throwing, if you've got that in 2 disks, it's, I think, set up in RAID 0 or RAID 1, you throw another disk into it, and thus you want to make your array, switch it into RAID 5. So, you know, but that's at the hardware level. So whether or not they're going to bring that back to the hardware or leave it at the operating system.
Right, right. Bill, let me ask you.
Sort of impact on that, I suppose, doesn't it?
Sorry, Andrew, I cut you off. Say that one more time.
I guess it depends how simple it's going to be too. Like if you add something on a USB 2 external, like a, you know, World Book or a My Book or something like that, you're going to slow down if you're on a USB 2, whereas you go USB 3 or a SATA for an external, then I think that's going to make it better for people because of the performance. I think a lot of people are still apprehensive about opening the top of a box, you know, oh, if I open my PC, I'm going to void my warranty type deal.
Right.
So I think if, you know, you can get performance without opening the lid, then, you know, I think people will probably start to embrace it. But I think it's still something where it's, you know, they're going to pick up the phone to the family support guy or whoever it happens to be to say, hey, what does this mean? You know, I plugged a disc in, it popped up and said, do I want to do blah with it? If that's right, how they're going to build the technology into the OS.
Right. Bill, you do a lot of PC support for your family. If this option is available, does it change the way you help your family, or, you know, do you see it as an option for you to help them with some of their storage space if you're not necessarily going to put a home server in for them?
Yeah, you know, when I first saw the post, it was interesting, and rumors have been all around for the past, I guess, 6 months about it. What I can think of, and if not, it's not going to, you know, apply to myself or you guys or anyone in the chat, but, you know, for the average person that you're helping, when they get full of their, you know, 500 gig hard drive, this is an easy way to go and just add another drive to their system, make it into the pool, maybe make it larger, more, not so much for the mirroring or the parity, but as far as like getting the most out of a cheaper disk and doubling it up with another one, just to get the pool bigger, because, you know, drives right now aren't cheap. So I'm thinking for the person with the older computer that, well, they might not have Windows 8 on it. You know, it might blow the whole theory out of the window, but I'm thinking there's a place for it. I'm just not sure how it's going to fall in line with the average person.
Yeah, so let's run just a quick scenario out there. So your sister, right, has purchased a has an older PC, or let's just say they have a new one. It's got this Windows 8 technology on it. It's got one drive on it, and they got it's a terabyte, and they filled it up. And they say, "Hey, what do I do?" And is it one of the suggestions though, or do you lean on this and say to them, "Well, you know what? Just go buy another hard drive. I'll come over and put it in, and then you enable the storage space to just to expand that out."
Yeah. I think that's how I would do it, and then use the cloud as a backup. You know, okay. That's how I would probably go at the normal person.
Okay, for the average person, Christian, is that something? How would you handle that? Is that something you'd use in that way?
I don't really. I mean, it's possible, but I like to keep things simple where there's not another software technology involved that you have to go back and, you know, teach people and tell them you've put it on their system and that kind of deal. So.
Yeah, it does add another level of complexity, right, for them in some regards.
A little bit, yeah.
Do you think the average person is more inclined to see two drives logically and that where that makes sense to them, or if you expand it to one drive, they're happier because they don't have to think about it?
No, I think people get the idea. I mean, most people I know who are like average users understand the idea of, you know, two physical drives showing up in my computer and what can I put on the one drive and what can I put on the other. But I think a lot of people who, you know, have these massive video archives, have these massive picture archives, they're just buying external 1 terabyte hard drives and putting it on there and not even worrying about occupying space.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whenever someone says they're running out of space, they're like, oh, just, you know, go buy a external hard drive. And I think that's what a lot of people are doing.
Right. Yeah, my sister-in-law, I stayed at my brother and sister-in-law's house. And I was in her work area, and she had six 1 or 1.5 terabyte drives lined up on her shelf. And all of them were all her pictures, right?
Wow.
And she has six because they use three, and then the other three are for backup. So they're in two places. And I said, what if this room burned down? she said, well, that would be a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
So you got to think through that piece as well. But there could be some, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see how good this is. And I do think this adds a new tool to the toolbox for the average user, and especially when you're trying to help people. If I guess depends on how they use their system and what their needs are, but there might be some opportunity, I would say, to I don't know at the OS level, kind of nice to put two drives in and run the OS on them and back up one up to the other. I mean, that would be an easy, well, and you can do that through the motherboard as well. Set an easy RAID 1 where they mirror. And so maybe that's a moot point. Most motherboards now come with some kind of RAID on them. Yeah.
Although I think this is probably a little bit more fault resilient. So I think this is going to tell you if a disk is going to is looking like failing. And
yeah,
I think the downside of it from what I'm reading is that it's not going to allow you to boot from it. So it still assumes that you've got something SSD or a dedicated spindle for your operating system.
Okay.
And then this is where you put all your data.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing that as well.
Yeah, I think where it'll shine though is if they do another release of Home Server on the Windows 8 server platform, and if this technology's in it, it's effectively going to give us back Drive Extender.
Well, it's interesting because we talked about, we talk a lot about this a lot on the Home Server show. And, there had been some talk of the old Drive Extender making its way into the Windows. You know, eventually it would make its way to the Windows platform. Then they scrapped that. And ironically, it's coming out on the Windows platform first now, whatever this new technology is that they're doing. And it will migrate its way, hopefully, it'll migrate its way onto small business, you know, Windows Home Server and Small Business Essentials. It will most likely migrate its way onto those platforms. Now, the real question is, how does it handle, you know, the reason they removed Drive Extender to begin with is because the way it interacted with applications. Will it have enough robustness to, so to speak, to handle the problems that the original or the second generation Drive Extender had? I don't know. There's some good questions there.
You'd hope if they're going to throw it at the desktop platform, then it's going to be resilient for pretty much any app that any user can throw on a machine. Yeah, otherwise, they're building themselves a real nasty rod for their own back if they.
Except if they build something at the enterprise level, you might have where you have multiple users signing in to the same. To the same box and accessing data simultaneously, whereas at the desktop level, you don't generally have that kind of is it called multi-tenancy? Is that what that's called? I forget. I may not have that.
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I may not have that terminology correct. So it'd be interesting to see what this does and a sneak peek of what's ahead in Windows 8, quite possibly. I know we'll test the heck out of it. Before it goes anywhere, and hopefully we'll see this in some kind of beta sometime soon. Andrew, in the show notes, you threw out, let's just change, we'll get a little lighter here. You threw out this audio, yeah, sorry, that was a bad pun, wasn't it? You threw out a link for Audio Bulb, which is a wireless light bulb music system. I'm taking a look at this thing. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, I found it a couple weeks ago before Christmas. Can't remember what I was looking for. I think I was looking for low power LED downlights because we're on a bit of a power saving kick still out here, and came across this one, and it's something that looks really cool. What it is, it's a sound distribution system that plugs into your household light bulb sockets. So you unscrew your traditional light bulb, you screw one of these audio bulbs in, which has a built-in LED downlight, and then it comes with a base station that you plug in your Apple device via your 30-pin connector or a regular 3.5-millimeter jack, and it'll distribute the sound out through these new light bulbs which you then got in your ceiling. So, you know, for an average person who wants to be able to stream music throughout their house without having to wire the place, and probably not so concerned about, you know, fantastic bass reflex and stuff like that, this would be a really nice way of easily extending your audio system out throughout the house, and, you know, using an iPhone or an iTouch, and getting those tunes where you want them.
It looks pretty cool. It does say you can create two different zones in the house, and they say configuring the zones is as simple as in the initial setup. And so, you know, you could have one in the kitchen maybe down one in the basement and one upstairs, and get kind of the whole house, although it's not really a whole house, but, you know, do you really need that stuff in your bedroom? So, get some mostly house music experience and control that thing with your iPhone. This does look pretty cool, and these things look... You know, if you plugged them into a can light, you wouldn't even see them for the most part, you know?
Yeah, they look pretty legit, don't they? I mean, if you're in a, you know, two-bedroom apartment or something like that, you know, or a university dorm or something like that, this would almost be ideal because you just wouldn't have to worry about anything being pinched or, you know, in a situation where it's in the way as well.
Yeah, you could take it with you as well. I mean, that'd be a pretty easy... Yeah,
exactly.
That'd be a pretty pretty easy option to take with you. Bill, any chance these will get installed in the shop?
I really like them. I really do for the house because we have an intercom system in the house, but it's an old school four-wire system. So each room has this big, god-awful speaker and intercom, and we don't use the intercom. We'd like to use it just for music, and it's like it is perfect, but unfortunately it's sold out. So I'll have to wait to see how much it costs.
Yeah, well, the price on this, these are not cheap. So $299 for the base station and two lights, and then you can buy each additional light for $99.
It's still when you do a whole house though.
Yeah,
I mean that's not expensive, you know, considering what it costs.
Where did I see that pricing?
I don't know. I can't find it.
Where did I threw that into the notes because I found it. I found it somewhere when I was looking around for it.
Yeah, I see. Okay, that's it was in the notes. I was like, I saw that pricing somewhere, and then I couldn't find it on the site. That's that company. You think they pronounce that Genie, G-I-I-N-I-I? Is that or Gini? How do you think they pronounce that, Andrew?
You're drinking Genie, mate. Genie, maybe.
Yeah, maybe so.
Genie? I don't know. Yeah, it looks like they sell on Amazon and a company called Frontgate, but haven't heard of Frontgate.
Very cool. Yeah, pretty cool little setup. One, if you've got an older house and you don't want to rewire, or two, if you want to take it with you, and you don't care. I imagine the audio on these is not to Bose quality, but it probably good enough for just some background noise if you got friends over or you want a little solo piano playing gently in the background on a misty, rainy. Oh, I'm sorry. That was a book I'm writing. it'd be a good little product.
If it was on Boone, perhaps.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go. All right, very cool, Andrew. You also had Cryptex USB key.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in a similar vein, I think I was bored one day and I came across this one. I was looking through Kickstarter projects, and this one's a Cryptex. Cryptex is like, if for those who've watched the Da Vinci Code, the what do you call it, the rotating puzzle that had the map inside it or the clues inside it for the next stage when they were I think they found it in a vault or something like that. And anyway, it's like a physical puzzle which you line all the barrels up and it pulls apart. So this Kickstarter project is a Cryptex which is your physical puzzle that then has a 256-bit encrypted USB stick inside it. And they're saying if this thing gets up off the ground, they're going to release it in 4, 8, and 16-gig models. And I reckon if you're a security guy, and I'm fairly passionate about security, especially in the enterprise, something like this, it has a huge geek factor. But it also looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it does look pretty cool. The picture on the site. And we'll post these all in the show notes if you're listening to the recorded version of this. But yeah, these do look they're a little kind of twisty. They got the letters, and you kind of twist them around to get your code in there, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You're getting a little.
Yeah, and I've just thrown the link into the chat. It's
you're getting you're getting a little farther behind, Andrew. Yeah, can you hear us?
Okay, getting a bit choppy.
Yeah. Okay, well, Cryptex.
Yeah, I can hear you, fine. Yep.
Cryptex, and Andrew will throw that in the show notes as well. If you're serious about encryption, and who shouldn't be at this point, a good opportunity to, and this is a Kickstarter, which just means this isn't really out there yet. They're just kind of working on it and raising some funding for that kind of project. Yeah, very cool. So, all right, thanks, Andrew. Christian, it's your shot at Christian's Corner. And what do you got for us?
All right.
Besides not having a theme done yet.
Yes. Besides not having a theme done yet, so
Christian, we've been doing this a year, and we've been talking about the Christian's Corner theme the whole time.
I should.
I know. Maybe this summer break. We had high aspirations of you writing something last summer break, and then you made a whole bunch of money over the summer, and yes. I'll need to pay you for it.
I should cajole Mr. McCabe into using his little app there.
We should do a Kickstarter project for the theme.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting.
What do you got?
All right. So interesting. Fun stuff from my desk is that I'm very awkwardly impressed by MSI tech support. I don't know if I told everyone about the whole BIOS incident with the AMD Bulldozer CPUs.
Yeah, I think we talked about that last time.
Yeah, well, in any event, they gave me the 1D4 revision BIOS, which fixed my issues, and then someone else posted on BIOSMod saying they had another issue that it didn't fix. And so I told them, well, try replying to the ticket. They may have yet another version we're unaware of. And what do you know? they give them 1D5 when I had 1D4. And when he posted the link, the link was a direct FTP link. And whatever tech support member used that link copied plain text, his username and password link, to get onto the MSI FTP login server, because the username and password was being sent in plain text as part of the login URL. So I had to remove the link and put a mirror up so that, you know, a bunch of people wouldn't start trolling MSI's beta BIOS servers and getting their hands on things they shouldn't. But I'm pleased is the word, that they are releasing those BIOSes for people having problems. But it would be nice if they could be more regular about pushing those updates that are working for people. So interesting there.
Well, for most people, the BIOS update is still a mystery.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, for people who are running, you know, Bulldozer and want their Steam working right, I mean, they know. The BIOS manufacturers have gotten it pretty simple. They've gotten it down to the point where, you know, there's a menu in the setup screen that says Update BIOS. You hit the Enter key. You know, it asks you for a USB drive. You hit the Enter key again, and then you just point it to the file, and you're done. I mean, that's how simple they've gotten it down to. So, I mean, that's even how I updated this
board. Right,
so.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's nice, because it used to be a lot harder.
Right.
And in most cases, it's a couple clicks.
Right. So.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We have a new spy plane?
We do have a new spy plane. There are rumors that the X-37B is in a orbit path that would only be useful for spying on ranges in the Middle East and Afghanistan, mm-hmm. and for tracking the new Chinese space station. And there has been no real public statement about what this aircraft is designed to do in the first place. I thought it was pretty interesting, though, just the general technology being powered by Boeing, excuse me.
Boeing.
Yeah.
It's up there rocking.
Yeah.
It's overpriced.
So, yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. So.
Yeah, that's the X-37B. Bill, yeah. Have you seen that? You've been following it all?
Yeah, actually, the article I was actually going to post in there, it's like, maybe it's not, it's over the top, but I saw that he popped it in here. But it's actually the view that supposedly the orbit of the 37B has with the Chinese space station is only once every two orbits, and it actually is a repelling orbit, they say. But it's real interesting. So mainly it's to focus, I think, on probably Iran and what's going on over there.
You know what I find most interesting is that amateur sky watchers are tracking this thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it says it was launched on March 5th, 2011, and amateur sky watchers have been keenly tracking it ever since. pretty interesting that the Air Force is trying to keep this stuff secret, and we got guys with telescopes on the ground. You know, NASA has trouble tracking all the things that are up there to begin with, and we got amateur guys who are tracking the spy satellites.
Yeah, low orbit, too.
If you know if you can find out the actual dimensions and circumference of your orbital flight path that you're looking at, you can create an Excel sheet and figure out all the values yourself to get the azimuth angles for where it's going to be on each X, Y, and Z axis, and it's relatively easy to match that to a time zone and figure out when it's going to be in the sky if you're an astronomy buff. But I don't really see why anyone would get in a tizzy over someone pulling out their telescope and seeing a little dot in the sky.
Yeah, well, I don't see why. Well, we're shocked that it's over the Middle East and Afghanistan.
Right.
You know, I hope that's not a shocking revelation that, you know, that, hey, while we're up there, let's put it in an orbit that can view the Middle East and Afghanistan. Oh, and if it just happens to swing by a Chinese spy satellite every once in a while,
well, you know, more pictures to take.
at least this isn't an aircraft that can get shot down in Pakistan and then just magically disappear.
Explode. Yeah, although it didn't blow up very well. There were some pieces of that thing left over. You know, as I look at, so this thing isn't made to come back down, right? I mean, as I'm looking at the picture of it, I assume that's some kind of representation of it. Yeah. But it's not, it's meant to stay up there, right? It doesn't come down at any point?
Indeed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it can move its orbit, I thought. I thought it could actually change its orbit.
So it's got some thrusters.
Am I wrong? No.
I imagine it would need to have some, right? I mean, you're not going to put a spy satellite like that in place in one orbit and then not
make it static.
Not be able to make it move. So it must have some kind of thrusters on it.
The design concept shows boosters. That happens every podcast.
Christian's phone's ringing.
The design on the back of that picture there shows boosters.
Yeah,
right.
You can see the little thrusted rockers. I thought that was cool.
What would surprise me if it was on a pattern over Australia? That would surprise me.
That'd be funny.
We got no laugh out of Andrew.
No.
Hey, we're friends of you guys.
We still got to check up on you.
Think, Andrew. So that's what we want you to believe.
We're a friend. Oh, we'll come and get your crap out of Hall Gap then. Now we've got a huge listening station in the middle of the country that's manned by US military. So
yeah.
Very
important. It's all good. You guys are our friends.
At the moment.
at least Andrew, you're our friend.
What, you found oil?
I hope they never find oil in Australia. That'll be over. What else do you got, Christian?
Just really quick, it was interesting. Saw that the new LG Spectrum has a 1.5 gigahertz CPU. So in the last two or three years, we've gone from like 500 megahertz CPUs to 1.5 gigahertz CPUs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. It looks a lot like the, and it's kind of designed a lot like the Samsung Galaxy 2.
Yeah, it looks nice.
Yeah, it's a good looking phone. And let me just say, now that I've traveled with my phone, I love it even more. And it is just a slick phone. I still need to reboot it every once in a while, but with Android. But you know, something hangs up, and it's just clean to get it. It's good to get a clean, you know, restart on it. But man, that thing is speedy and fast and takes great pictures and does everything it's advertised to do. So I imagine with this dual core 1.5 gigahertz and a 4.5-inch screen, it is going to be just dynamite. 8 megapixel camera. And I didn't ever go 3D with these phones. Just a single camera is just fine. And it's a good looking phone. Is that is that your next phone, Christian?
I don't think it's being carried on the Sprint network. So
you'll have to get the Galaxy 2.
Yes.
It's a great phone. Great phone. All right. It looks like you got a note in here for me.
Yeah. I wanted to see if we ever figured out if iTunes, the 10.5.2 update is still.
I should probably. Sarah, if you're listening, come on down here because she had all that info on that.
She did. I saw a post, but I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So she had found out, she called Apple and said, hey, what's going on with this update? And they tried to kind of, you know, they tried to kind of dismiss it, and there were some other things, and she figured some things out. So I'll see if I can get her. Oh, she says hang on. So she'll come down here in a second. Go to your next story, and then we'll have her give us an update.
All right. Well, this is actually two cool things. I just noticed for the first time that Google Audio Search now shows up like in desktop. So if I go to Google, it'll automatically pick up my microphone, and I just click the little microphone icon and talk my search query, and it's like dead on accurate every single time.
That's pretty cool. That is a nice feature if you haven't seen that.
Yeah, neat. And the really cool thing, deal of the week, is a free deal of the week. So what kind of better deal of the week is one that is free? If you are a student, Microsoft has this new thing called DreamSpark, where if you can prove that I'm pretty sure it's for high school too. If you can prove you're a high school or college student, they will give you, there's a range of applications from Server 2008 R2 to SQL to Visual Studio. So all these high cost software and development servers and tools that would normally cost you a large license, Microsoft is giving free for people who are in high school and college.
And do you need to have some kind of EDU email address to make that work?
I don't know if it's just EDU or proof of the fact that you're enrolled in a college. I would imagine doing the EDU address is the easiest way to prove that, but
right.
I'm not too sure what the registration process is.
We had purchased, they'd had some kind of software deal for students, and they did require you to send the request in from a .edu account, and then they sent the number back to you to buy, I don't know, it was Office for $50 or something like that back in the day. And so what are the, Christian, what are the titles that you can get on this?
Visual Studio, Professional, Pluralsight, Kodu, Game Studio, Server 2008 R2 Standard, SQL Server, Virtual PC, Windows Embedded, Visual Basic, C++, Web Developer, Expression Studio 4 Ultimate, Robotics Developer, Studio 4, Windows Phone. So all this stuff is really enterprise or developer-geared software.
Windows Embedded, you said that already, Windows Embedded. So, yeah, some pretty big titles out there and available to you, I assume. Just sign up. It's to get started.
Yep.
Sign in, get verified, and then have access to these titles.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Have you? Are you gonna do it?
You have TechNet,
right?
Yeah. Not really a big need. I mean, most of the software I can access via TechNet anyway. So.
Okay. Very cool. Well, I think I hear some footsteps coming down the stairs here. Let's see if we can. This will be the first time we've tried and we've tried two people in the same studio.
A Sarah supplement.
So she's gonna come. I'm gonna give her the one ear. Can you just take that one? No, and I don't want to do it right now. But jump in there. Get close to me. You're married to me. It's okay. So,
myself leaning over on the meds.
Yeah. Well, you can sit
on. Can we turn on a camera, please?
You want to see this? No. Okay. So, tell us what you did the iTunes update. Tell us what it did to your PC.
Well, it didn't do anything to my PC, but the very next time I hooked up my iPhone, it started to sync automatically, which it was set to do. And all of my music disappeared off of my iPhone. So I was like, what? And it would not let me. I started trying to get my music back on my iPhone naturally, but it wouldn't let me recreate my custom playlists. And I could not find the manually manage music feature, which is because I manually manage all my music. So it was late at night, and I was really frustrated, so I put in, got on the Apple Express and put in for a tech to call me the next morning. You know, you send them an email, and they, or you sign up online, and they give you choices for appointments, and then somebody calls you at that time. So anyway, so they got me straightened out the next morning, because I had to find that they moved where that feature is located. It used to be on the music page when you hooked up your device, and now it's on the summary page. So once I did that, I could get my playlist going again. But what I discovered was that manually manage music obviously is not one of the default settings when you first load iTunes. The default settings are that it's going to automatically sync. And they put some new features on this update.
And this is 10.5.2, by the way.
Yes. The way if you sync with your library and you don't manually manage your music, they put some new features in there. And I think they're all deselected when you first load it. And for whatever reason, that particular default setting is being restored when you load that update. So. And the other thing you have to go in and do is you have to go in and tell iTunes to prevent automatic syncing with iPads, iPhones, and iPods.
So there is something you need to be careful. I mean, as you're doing this update on iTunes, yeah. You do want to be a little careful.
Well, what I suggest is go ahead and load it. There's no problem with the update itself, but I would first go into just in iTunes in general, before you hook up your device, go to the, I think it's the Edit tab, and under Edit, you have your preferences at the bottom. And then when you get the preferences window open, go to Devices and select Prevent iPads, iPods, and iPhones from automatically syncing. Then go in and hook up your device and get your settings how you want them. And then if you want it to auto-sync, go back and do that. But you can't tell it to manually manage music until you hook up your device. And for me, obviously, that was too late and my music got wiped off. So that's just the one thing. I did put a call into Apple and tell them that this was doing this, because after I had this problem, I took my daughter's laptop and I checked her settings, the way she keeps her things, and then I loaded the update and went back and looked at her settings, and they were all back to the defaults. And it's not supposed to do that, but it did it. So,
is that Windows only?
That's for Windows. That's not on a Mac.
That's all we have. Yeah. I mean, I have a Mac, but we don't sync an iPod to it.
Yeah, I think, well, I wouldn't put iTunes on any PC, so I have a Mac Mini just for that and the weather station, just for iTunes.
Right, yeah.
I don't trust it.
Yeah. Well,
that's the first time I've ever had any major problems. So, but they were real receptive. You know, Apple, they have good support. So,
oh, they do, yeah.
They were like, you know, thanks for letting us know, and we'll pass that along. So, but I know my son's friend, the same thing happened to him when he first hooked up his iPod Touch after he loaded the update. His music got wiped off. And then, you know, my son hooked up his iPod and there was no problem. So it must have had to do with the way he had his settings.
The way he had it configured versus the way you had it configured.
Right.
What do you think, guys? Should we have her on the podcast more often? Do you see the way she explained where those settings were? She wasn't even looking at anything.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Natural.
She should be on the...
A lot of tech support.
Yeah. You got to have an accent, though. Sorry.
We'll have her on the podcast more often then. I take it. That for Mike Howard, that would up our girl ranking. And any questions on that? Christian, did that cover it?
Yeah, that was pretty thorough.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So, all right. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for explaining that to us. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
All right, this is my wife, Sarah, in case you didn't know, and she is now the iPod extraordinaire in the house.
Hardly.
Bill, what do you got for us?
Well, you know, I was, you know, trolling through the news, and memory has been so cheap for, what has it been now, 3/4?
Yeah,
I
mean,
we can buy memory at just dirt cheap. And it seems to go on a roller coaster. Sometimes it's a half a year here. But I just didn't know why it was so cheap. You know, why is that the case? And I stumbled across this article that basically, you know, spelled it out that the inventories are so high. And with most people doing the tablets, that the need for DRAM was drastically reduced, you know. Not so much the main SIM chip that you would buy, but the smaller chips that you see on your RAM chip when you buy it. Those chips, those are the DRAMs, and those are just sitting there in surplus. And it's really interesting to go through and read this article that hopefully will be in the show notes. You get a real idea of what's going on in the market and how everything's shifting to SSD with the NADs. So, you know, like Samsung and other companies are saying, you know what, we're not making money over here with the memory modules. Let's go and flip it over here to the SSDs. And it's just and then all of a sudden, you know, the bottom falls out and the inventory is so high. So I think we're going to have a good 2/4 with buying whatever memory you want for as much as you want.
Yeah,
I mean, for as little as you want.
Right. I think if you were ever going to upgrade, now is the time, right? I mean, we've been saying this forever on the Home Server Show, but in here as well. Now is the time. Memory's cheap. Get out there. Get as much as you can. Max out your motherboard. And even if you don't need to. I mean, it's
just
that cheap.
Yeah, especially with, like, you know, if you have a VM that you're trying to like I got 16, you know, I just bought 16 gig, and it's like, you know, really, you know, I spend more of that on tolls in New Jersey, you know, in a day. So it's extremely cheap. I think everyone should just max it out. Just max out everything.
Right.
Buy up the inventory.
And just it's easy to put in, and it's easy, you know, if you haven't done that before, although if you're listening to the show, I'm sure you have. But if you haven't, it's not terribly difficult. If you've got a laptop, you know, desktop, maybe that's got 2 gig. Now it'd be a good time to go to 4. I like 4 for a desktop. If that's all you're running is one desktop on it, that's a good number to have out there.
Yep.
Didn't realize that. I'd always gone with 2, and Windows 7 really likes 4 a lot better than it likes 2.
Yeah, even if it's 32-bit, you know, you're still getting 3 of the 4.
Right, right.
And I would recommend definitely for anyone with a laptop or, a Dell desktop or an HP desktop, you know, go to Crucial.com. They have an excellent website. You can go and put in your service tag or put in your information on your system. You'll find out what your maximum is for your motherboard or for your system, and then just buy accordingly.
Nice. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
That's cool.
It's very good.
Crucial.com. Andrew will get that in the show notes. Andrew, are you going to be able to do show notes this week?
Yeah, it'll probably be a day late, that's all.
That's no problem.
But I'm going to be driving for 13 hours in 2 days' time. So.
Oh, I just did 10 yesterday, so I have I understand your driving. Well, it's okay. I've got some work to do tonight, and we probably won't get this mixed up until the weekend anyway, so no problems there. Well, that's really cool. I have to try that, Bill. I haven't gone out there. You know, memory, buying individual memory was always a mystery for a long time. Mm-hmm. Would it work? Wouldn't it work? What do you need? I mean, they give you lots of long numbers. Yeah. Sounds like that kind of simplifies it.
Yeah, even if you're not using Crucial Memory, you're going on Newegg to buy your memory, let's say. I use that all the time. Someone gives me a notebook and say, you know, I got a problem, and maybe it comes down to that second cheap value RAM they put in. I use that just to find out what can that motherboard, you know, take. Because you don't want to put – if you get too much, then it's not going to work at all. It's not going to boot.
Right.
So I use that religiously. I find it an excellent resource.
Christian, generally with memory, and Bo, you can answer this too, generally you can go up a step or two in memory on a board, but you can't go down, right? So if it takes 1066 memory, mm-hmm. you can buy 1333 or what's the next step up? 1666?
Mm-hmm. 1600.
1600.
Yeah, 1600, yep.
But so generally I can go up, right, from a compatibility standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, yep. You can – a lot of – like. Middle range desktops will come with like 1333 DDR. Mm-hmm. You could buy 1066 and then the motherboard would automatically clock all of the chips to 1066.
It could be a stability issue. It's basically like underclocking your CPU. You know, you can get a little more maybe stability. You got a better high end chip or a memory chip and you're just basically underclocking it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. You know, you're using less with more, right? In that case,
right.
Yeah. All right. That's good to know. That's another thing I didn't know up until about a year ago. I was always paranoid that you had to have the exact right memory in there, or it wouldn't work. And I think it was maybe it might have been you, Christian, who said, "No, you can just get that; it'll work."
Yeah.
And BIOS sure enough,
it's become pretty complete. In regards to memory, I mean, as long as it's, you know, as long as you're not trying to stick a DDR2 and a DDR3 module, you're normally
that's always the problem.
But can you overclock it? Can you take? Can you put a 800 in a 1066? In a sense, overclocking that chip.
Work? And if your BIOS has the manual overclocking settings and it's not the one
voltage,
of these
VM
computers, I mean, if you can manually set your clock speeds, yes, but you're going to burn that. If you're going to try and clock a 800 chip to like a 1066 and you don't have the right stuff or RAM cooler spreaders or anything like that, you're just going to burn the chip out. So, you know, I would advise buy the higher power clock chip, and then if you really want to push it, you don't push your memory dividers first, you just push your front side bus clock up a little for a little bit of a tweak. But I mean, if you want speed, buy the hardware that's going to give you the speed. Don't try and buy under and then overclock to what you would have paid for and then watch the chip burn out 3 months later.
Yeah. It's too cheap now to even waste your time with that. You know?
I mean, you can get 16 gigs of DDR3 RAM now for around $100. So, I mean, if you can't afford to do that, then you shouldn't be looking to do memory upgrades.
Sure. Sure. Oh, it's good to know. Back when I used to sell memory out at Computer Renaissance, memory was an exact science in those days. And so I just kind of got trained that it needs to be exactly right. And, you know, think about this would have been 1998. And motherboards were not as sophisticated and you know, those they weren't as good of adapting or adjusting. And if you put the wrong memory in, you could ruin the board.
Yeah.
And so
I did that once.
Did you?
When I was like, it was when the Vista Beta came out. So I must have been like,
six.
I would have been like 10 or 11. And I had this classic, KR7A A-bit board, which was like the primo board for AMD Athlons back in back in the XP days, and I had I want to say like 512 megabytes of RAM, and I was going to be the hot stuff and put in another chip to have enough to run Vista Beta on this KR7 RAID, and it was going to be this really cool thing. And so I had this monstrosity box open, and I you know, it's been so long, it's hard to remember, but I just remember putting in the chip and it felt right. It just clipped right in there. But
it was
what
one
do you know?
Tooth over.
I had it. Yeah, I think it. No, I had it backwards.
Oh yeah,
and
that, yeah.
Because I was having issues with my 512 megs of RAM getting it to work with Vista, so I thought, all right, let me test a different chip. So I took both those chips out. Being too inexperienced to note the direction and where it lined up with the notch, and oh yeah, I'll just shove that right in the memory slot and we'll be good to go. And the next thing you know, all you hear is a couple beeps, really long. Oh, and then it was just dead, and then the board wouldn't even turn on, and then when it did, it just made these really eerie
help me sounds.
Yeah, well, it did help me sounds for like the first two boot ups. Then it just made, you know, maximum RPM fan speed noises.
That's always good.
It was such a crushing day in my childhood.
It scarred you.
Did you watch capacitors bulge like a biscuit in the oven?
Yeah, I just remembered thinking I just destroyed my life's companion right here. I mean, that motherboard was so cool. Uh-huh. And I remember some of the early LucasArts games came out, and that was the box to play it on, and it was a cool box, and
to its demise.
Poor KR7A.
Yeah, lesson learned, right?
Oh yeah.
Real quick, Jim, just because
go.
With Christian saying that, and actually I was looking on the chat, and Die Hard brought something up. If you're going to buy new memory and do an upgrade, don't try to mix and match. Yank all that old crap out. Put all new stuff in, because when you're dealing with different modules and different banks and different timing, depending on what system you have, you know, it just causes major problems. Anyone who's ever had, you know, you're dealing with two different banks, or you're dealing with the Intel where you needed three for the bank interleave, just rip it all out and just buy match pairs or triplets or whichever board you have.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Even now, people are recommending to match based on serial numbers. Like if you look at the serial number, if you buy a set of four sticks of RAM, it'll tell you which serial number, and they recommend you matching up those serial numbers in the slots based on what your motherboard, like if you're going dual channel or triple channel. Mm-hmm. Properly lining up even the serial numbers.
Yeah.
And is that different? Bill, is that different? Or Christian, is that different than tested pairs? I know they advertise that, you know, if you buy pairs of them, that the tested, you know, they say they're tested pairs. Is that the same thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Tested pairs with the sticker on the.
Right. Right.
Right. My Corsair Vengeance 16 gig, I just bought the DDR3 from my VM. It comes in a four pack, you know, four fours. So it's completely matched and ready to rock and roll, and it's guaranteed. So,
yeah.
A G-Skillet is a great bang for the buck, and
yep.
Normally you always get good stuff that matches and just works out of the box, and compatibility and performance is really good if you go G-Skillet. They've gotten consistently up to the top of the ranks of memory. Yep.
Very cool. Andrew, did you want to add something?
I know you guys are just a lot more serious about it than I am. I just tend to grab whatever will fit and shove it in, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, I take it back and can buy a different brand.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, there's some tricks to it, and you know, if you're serious about your motherboard, I guess that's one of those things.
Pat, well, if you need ECC checked RAM on a server board, then you really want to make sure it's the right stuff.
Right.
Yeah. True. I don't tend to be as much of a power user as well, so I tend to I don't play games, and I tend to just, if I'm going to throw more memory into a machine, it's if I need to run, you know, some more VMs or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
For testing, but I don't tend to get too carried away with needing a high powered machine. I think the best powered machine in our house is my wife's, and it's a E something processor, so 2.5 gig.
Anyway, yeah, thereabouts. It was funny because I had a customer's box here, and he's like, "Oh, you know, it's an old Dell," and he's like, "Can you just put more memory in it? I just want to get it by another year." It had Rambus memory in it. I'm like, I should take this and throw it out the window now and watch it hit the ground. I don't know if anyone tried to buy that memory now. It's like $9,000 for 512.
Yeah, I'll take a photograph of it for posterity. Yeah.
Yeah, right next to my Commodore 64, my VIC-20.
Well, even now, it's actually even interesting. I had never really noticed. If you read Server 08 Microsoft support stuff, they will automatically off the bat not give you technical support if they find out you're not using ECC checked RAM.
What? Really? And what does that mean, Christian?
That means that there's an additional, if you look at RAM chips, normally they have eight. You'll see eight little memory boxes on the silicon piece. With ECC, you have a ninth that checks the parity and the data going across the RAM. So if it sees errors, it'll automatically check and clean them out of RAM.
And that's and is that memory then a little more expensive than?
Not very. More expensive. It depends on what kind of ECC checking you get and what the buffer size is, but generally no. But generally it's not really bought unless you're doing it in a server environment. I mean, really, desktops don't use it.
One of the things that comes with the microserver, both John Zadler and I, you know, bought my. And do you have one, Bill?
No, but I remember hearing that the microserver takes the ECC.
It does
memory.
Take ECC, yep. And right now, Kingston ECC at Newegg for that box, that would work. $83 for 8 gig, which, at about $10 a gig is a little expensive. Mm-hmm. I think I could probably get 8 gig of just regular memory for a little cheaper than that, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can
run regular RAM in the microserver as well. It doesn't have to be ECC.
Oh, okay.
And now you can go to biosmods.com and download your personal HP ProLiant Unlocked BIOS Edition, which will allow you to adjust your memory timings.
Wow, you went British there.
I was going to say, nice accent. Is that Phoebus and Ferb?
Great. That was almost like the Skype call testing service.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Skype call testing service.
Yeah, see, he does that perfect. Pretty well. you've heard that a lot. All right, so I don't necessarily have to go ECC on the microserver.
No, I've got a couple running for friends and personal clients that just run regular RAM. All right. And it's the Kingston Value RAM, so it's not even, you know, anything that's what you'd call a decent chip.
Yeah.
That was just using the Kingston RAM Finder, and it the only criteria was it can't be too high because of the power supply. Because it'll short out when it gets, if you put sticks in it that are too high when you slide the little tray out.
Sure. Right. Right. Yeah, you got to be careful with that. You can't get the stuff that's got those coolers that sit up really high.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, just as an example, you can get a G-Skill Value. Now, this is probably the bottom of the bottom, but G-Skill Value Series 8 gig, same configuration, $35. So, you know, yeah, that's half, less than half the price. $10 shipping, that's kind of surprises me. Usually RAM has free shipping on that from Newegg. But, yeah, well, $45 for the Ripjaw series, G-Skill Ripjaw, 8 gig, same configuration, $45 with $10 shipping. So this is the one that got the little teeth, you know, the little cooler on top. And Andrew, do you think those would go in there?
I think they'll probably be a little bit too high.
Okay.
The chips I put in had probably 3 or 4 mil clearance to the metal cage above the motherboard when you slide it out.
Okay.
So you need something that's around about the same height as the chips that come with it.
Okay.
And you'll get.
So Bill's showing right now.
Yeah.
And
those are.
Yeah. So those might be a little high, Bill.
Yeah.
Kill your video again for me. Sorry, it it messes with Andrew's audio.
And it's and it kills my bandwidth.
Isn't that interesting? We're all connected that way. Well, that's good because I was talking with John earlier in the week. You know, mine has 2 gig. I run Windows. In fact, I'm running Windows 7 on it right now for the podcast here. It's actually the PC that runs my microphone. And real convenient, to easy to use. When I'm done, I can pull the Windows 7 and slide in Windows Home Server 2011 and fire it back up, and it goes right to 2011. So kind of a dual-purpose box. And I'm
not. Turn it off first?
Yes, I do turn it off first, Andrew. Thank you. I was doing a demo online the other. I was Andrew and I think maybe Rich were chatting, and I was so excited about how these drives just came out, and I pulled one right out, and they're not hot swappable, and it was the OS drive. So it, you know what? Ironically, not ironically, that's the wrong word. Amazingly, it stayed on for.
It ran for quite a while.
A minute or two before it shut itself off. So, you know, Windows 7 gracefully could handle its OS drive being gone for a minute or two before it shut itself down. That was kind of cool. I didn't realize that. All right, all right, gents. One more thing before we go. We're a little over in time, but one more thing. One of the things Facebook rolled out this week, actually I think it was last week or maybe even 2 weeks ago, but it's been rolling out slowly to everybody, is this idea of a timeline.
Yeah.
And I was a little skeptical at first, but I tried it and switched over to it, and at first I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. You know, it replaces the profile page of old. And the more I use it, the more I like it. It does a nice job of summarizing some of your activity. If you're a person who not only likes to tell everyone where you're at, but then go back and look and see where you're at, there is some summary options in there. It shows you pictures that you've posted, things you've posted, places you've been. One of the nice things was it has a places for January, right? And so it shows all the places I checked in when I was out west in Colorado last week. And kind of a nice little, you know, nice little change. And so if you haven't checked that out, it should be available for just about everyone now. And you just need to enable the timeline features, and it will change your profile. One of the things that inspired me to do is I had never... I did some military service back in the 80s from 1986 to 1992. And I've never really documented that anywhere in the last 25 years. And so I'm coming up on our 20 year anniversary of getting out. And so I went to my profile. You know how you can put in your employers and stuff? And I couldn't, I couldn't remember things. Like I was like, so what company was I in? And, you know, I could remember where I was stationed, but some details were starting to, like, you know, drop away after 20 years. So it kind of inspired me to go back in there and update some stuff from, like, 1986 through 1992 because I'm realizing that I don't really have that documented anywhere, and it would be nice to have it at least someplace because I want to know that information, you know, at some point in time. Now, Facebook may not be the place forever, but at least I've got it someplace, right?
It's captured.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you haven't tried that yet, love it or hate it, I think, again, at first I didn't like it at all. But it does have some functionality. It lets you drill in by month. So it'll show all the years where you have available data. And then if you click on that year, it'll break it down into 12 months. And you can actually click on individual months and go back and see what kind of things you were doing and what you were posting and where you were at and the pictures that you posted and stuff like that. Pretty cool little feature, I got to say. If you're looking for some kind of, you know, scrapbook-like or some kind of history, it's a timeline, right? They've done a nice job on this. Has anybody else checked it out?
Yeah, I had a play with it. I think it's pretty cool. And I don't know if I switched mine over or not, but I will be.
Yeah, Rennie says that a big gap in your timeline indicates prison time.
or a sabbatical away from the incident.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. There's some fun. You know, it's kind of fun to roll through this. There's some things in here I kind of forgot about, and it's very cool. So anyways, if you haven't checked it out yet, give it a roll. All right, gentlemen, it's our time is up, and like I do every single week, I appreciate everyone who came out to listen, both live and those of you who are listening on the recorded version. If you're new to the podcast and you didn't know, we do record this every Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. Over at theaverageguy.tv/live. And you can join us. We've got a chat window that's open, and there's some good comments out there. I want to thank the guys that came out tonight. John, good to see you. And Jay, as well as Rennie. And I'm sure I'm missing somebody else in there. Of course, Sarah, who also joined us on the podcast. Thanks for your info. Bill, always good to have you out here and have you on your 7-week rotation. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Good to have you. We need to get you on a few more podcasts.
Anytime. You let me
know. Excellent. Andrew, appreciate you taking the time tonight to work up some kind of 3G connection so you could get connected from your winter or summer retreat, or wherever you're at, and appreciate you coming out.
It's most definitely summer and not a problem. It's always a pleasure.
Good to have you out. Christian, thanks for, as you do each and every week, thanks for your spectacular commentary on all things technical. And you know what? I think we mentioned this, right? You've just have a brand new BIOS update, right, for the N40L, that microserver. Is that available through you?
Yes, you can go to the bios-mods.com/form, and in the unlocked AMI BIOS section, you will see HP ProLiant microserver, and there is a thread, and it has already been tested by one user who is able to flash it without a problem. So there's also instructions you could follow from the MediaSmart if there was some sort of catastrophe, but there's a very low chance considering that it was flashed successfully. So you can head there and check it out. We're still looking in the S3 sleep options, and some people are saying Wake on LAN doesn't work with Linux, right? But I don't really believe them. So you can go check it out. It's pretty cool.
Does that one unlock the eSATA port to make it full speed as well?
There's a separate mod that a separate guy did off of BIOS mods that gets all 6 ports doing ACHI. This one I know has the ACHI menus re-unlocked, and one of my team members did this one, so I'm not sure if 5 and 6 is enabled for ACHI, but
okay.
Jump out there, Andrew, and leave a comment. You know, that'd be the best spot.
I need a box to load it on first.
Has somebody, Christian, put it in the Home Server Show forums that this is available?
I'm not sure. That would be a question for
maybe
John.
Maybe that would be a good John Zadler thing to do. John, if you haven't done that yet, and I know you're listening, maybe this deserves a post out there at the homeservershow.com, or at least in the forums. And because I think our community sold those things out. I'm pretty sure when that thing went on sale for $250, I think we bought just about everyone that was available to them. They did sell out of that original whatever lot they sold. It'd be great to know how many that was, but a bunch of people bought them. Again, that's the HP ProLiant microserver N40L. And Christian, would that work on the N36L as well, or is that a different BIOS?
That's another one I'm not sure on, but if someone makes me a BIOS backup image, I can run a comparison and see if it's indeed the same BIOS or not.
Very cool. Okay, good stuff, guys. Thanks for coming out tonight. This will do it for the Home Tech Podcast. We'll do it all again next week, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. And if you have any questions, comments, things you'd like us to cover, stories you'd like us to do, shoot me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Have a good night, everyone. We'll catch you next week.